There is nothing wrong with your radio. Do not attempt to change the station. We are controlling the transmission. We control the volume. We can change the tone to a fuzzy bass or focus it to a tinny treble.
We can speed things up so fast you can hardly understand what's being said.
Or we can make things so slow you don't care.
We control the content. We can make it boring.
Mystery Playhouse.
Or moronic.
90.1.
We can even make it repetitive.
Mystery Playhouse.
Or moronic.
90.1.
We can even make it repetitive. It's our show. We can do anything we want, because this is...
Mystery Playhouse. 90.1.
Good evening, and welcome to the Mystery Playhouse. I am glad you are here. Yes. I am the Count, back after a long leave of absence, due mainly to baseball, a sport that drives me batty. Yes, thank you. But I don't mean to belittle the profession. Let's just say it's out of my league. Yes. No, really. Now, after all, what's an umpire compared to a vampire? No. Now, the Mystery Playhouse, that's my game. You couldn't pay me to do this, and I will never go on strike. My, aren't we having fun? But I won't throw you any more curves. Yes, it's just the way my mind wanders. It's as hard as a diamond to stay on base. Yes. Well, we're getting in some trouble from upstairs, so on to the super scary show. We have two features for you. Michael Rennie stars in The Day the Earth Stood Still. But first, a frightening episode of Dimension X. So scary, even I would not have dreamed of it. It's called Nightmare. And after hearing it, you will never sleep again. Take it away, Dimension X.
Adventures in Time and Space. Transcribed in Future Tense. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Street and Smith, publishers of Astounding Science Fiction, bring you Dimension X.
Nobody knows exactly when the nightmare began. They must have planned it for years, though, because looking back, you can find little incidents here and there. Like the concrete mixer in New Jersey that killed the bricklayer. And the time Senator Milburn was sucked into the rotopress at the Capitol Office Building. Unrelated accidents, we thought at the time. But they add up now. The day we really should have suspected was when the men walked off the construction job at the new Brook Meadow atomic pile on Long Island. I'll never forget that day. I was working as a statistical clerk in the project then, operating one of those miracle computing machines developed to fill the requirements of Army ordnance. They called it ENIAC.
Mr. Gurney?
Huh?
Yes, Bella?
The chief wants to see you in his office. Me?
Unless you're no longer Samson Gurney, he wants to see you.
Oh, well, of course. What do you suppose...
I do not read minds, tea leaves, or crystal balls.
Of course, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have asked.
Don't apologize.
I'm sorry.
And don't wait for me. Mr. Hawk is in a hurry.
Yes, I'll go in right away, of course. Her name was Bella Roskopf. She was Mr. Hawk's secretary. I had always thought her a very attractive woman, but for some reason, she didn't seem to like me. Of course, on a clerk's salary, I couldn't exactly afford to take ladies to the best places. But I've often thought that if there weren't such a disparity in our ages, I might have... But then...
Got it.
You wanted to see me, Mr. Hawk?
Gurney, I thought those electronic computations were infallible.
They are, sir.
Well, we got a kickback from the chief physicist. These nuclear equations are inaccurate.
No, they aren't, sir.
I'm telling you what the memo says.
Well, sir, occasionally, if there's an overload, the machine goes haywire. Sort of has a nervous breakdown, you might say.
Mm-hmm.
We usually rest it up for 24 hours, and it's okay again.
Well, do whatever has to be done.
Yes, sir.
Oh, and Gurney.
Yes, sir.
You've been with the Bureau for over 15 years now. It would be a shame to have to remove you because you aren't keeping your mind on your work.
Well, Mr. Hawk, I hardly think anyone...
Excuse me. Hawk speaking. What? Say what? All of them? Well, have you tried to talk to them? Yes, of course. I'll send one of the safety engineers over. This place is falling apart piece by piece. Ms. Roscoe?
Yes, sir.
The men on the construction gang at the new building have walked out on us.
What?
Someone slipped this morning and fell into a turbine.
No.
Get the chief safety engineer. Have him over there right away.
Yes, sir.
Oh, and contact the personnel office. Have him ask the union to order the men back to work. Get back to me.
Yes, sir.
Now, Mr. Hawk...
Sorry, Gurney. I have no time to discuss anything further. Get on the job and stay awake, or we'll have to make some changes.
But, Mr.
That's
Hawk,
all,
I assure
Gurney.
You...
That's all.
Now, you probably gathered by this time that I wasn't a very important man at Brook Meadow. I hated Mr. Hawk with a passion because of his superior attitude, and because I knew that Miss Roscoe admired him as a man of strength and decision. I was secretly happy he was having trouble with his construction crews. That evening, I wandered over to the site of the new atomic pile to see where the man had fallen into the turbine. They had the construction area fenced off with barbed wire and a security guard stopped
me. Hold it, buddy. You can't go in there. That's a restricted area.
I'm Samson Gurney from the statistical section. Here's my identification.
I'm sorry, Mr. Gurney. Nobody's allowed in the area.
I see.
We had a lot of the employees come over tonight to take a look, but nobody gets in. What is?
Tell me, was he killed instantly?
Like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This guy was checking a magnetic field inside the turbine, see? Right down inside it. It's all over.
But if it wasn't hooked up...
Look,
it...
Mr. Gurney, they got smarter guys than me trying to figure these things out. Yesterday it was a concrete mold. Wham! Two guys get sucked right into the mixer.
My, my.
3 days ago, a bulldozer starts up by itself and runs wild. One killed. Two almost. Go figure it out.
You know what I think? Sabotage.
Uh-uh. We got more guards and FBI men in here than we got workers. Flea couldn't get through without proving he didn't come off a Russian wolfhound.
Now, I'm a statistician. All my life, I've been interested in statistics. So, a simple-sounding thing like this started me off. I went back to the office that evening instead of going home. And for the next 2.5 hours, I computed figures on the probability of industrial accidents for the types of machines we were using. I took one look at my figures and went down to Hawk's office. Just as I figured, he was staying late working on a settlement with the construction workers.
Yes?
Oh, good evening. I saw the light.
Well, Mr. Gurney, what are you doing here?
Is Mr. Hawk working late?
Yes, I am too.
I wonder if I could see him a moment.
We're busy right now. Could you make it tomorrow?
It's very urgent. I'll wait, if you don't mind.
Suit yourself.
Miss Roscoe, I wonder if perhaps you would consider having dinner with me this evening after you're through.
I have a date, Mr. Gurney.
I was thinking we might go to Raymond's. They have very good spaghetti.
Mr. Hawk has already asked me to have dinner with him at the Golden Shish Kebab.
Well, of course, that's out of my class.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mr. Hawk.
Yes,
Mr.
Dennis.
Gurney would like to see you a moment. He says it's very urgent.
Urgent? All right, I'll give him a minute.
Okay.
Thank you, Miss Roscoe. Mr. Hawk, in the past 3 months, industrial accidents all over the country have taken a sharp, unexplained upswing.
Why don't you stop playing FBI man and stick to your job? Which, incidentally, you haven't been doing too well. You and our computing machines have made mistakes before. Now, this is probably another. I'll have Miss Ross come so... Sir? What's the matter with this blasted buzzer? Miss Rosskopf! Miss Rosskopf!
Yes, sir.
Stop this blasted buzzer! Get a repairman, a mechanic! Anything but stop the thing!
And you, Gurney, get out!
I went back to my office to get my hat and coat, feeling about as unhappy and humiliated as a man can feel. He had thrown me out in front of her. The office was dark and deserted. The whole building seemed oppressive and unnatural. I walked across to my desk. In front of me, the ENIAC glowed and chattered eerily as it worked on the equations we had fed it that morning. Its many-fingered circuits hung against the wall like some great octopus. And the thousands of tubes glowed orange and blue in the dark like a thousand eyes staring at me. It almost seemed alive. Then it increased its tempo a moment, and a fleeting notion crossed my brain that it was laughing at me. Laughing like all the others. What was the matter with me? What? I shut my desk drawer and began to put the cover on my ENIAC typewriter when an amazing thing happened. The most amazing single incident of my life. Alone in the darkness, with no one at the keyboard, the ENIAC typewriter began to type. Am I going crazy? This can't be. There's nobody here. There's nobody here. Oh, no, no, no. I'm just imagining. It's in my mind. But I hadn't imagined it. The paper was there in the carriage. Did I dare read it? Or would the whole thing suddenly vanish and send me shrieking to the nearest psychiatrist? Samson Gurney, there are some equations better left unsolved. The answer to yours is death. It was not until I turned to go that I was suddenly aware of the utter and complete silence of the room. Then it dawned on me. The ENIAC had stopped working.
Gurney, do you expect me to believe this? It's insane.
Mr. Hawk, I'm a saint.
Take it easy, Gurney. Now, this is just some practical joke someone in the office is playing.
There was no one in the office.
Of course not. They wired up the machine and left.
I checked the machine myself, Mr. Hawk.
All right, Gurney. You leave this note with me, and I'll turn it over to the security force for further investigation.
But...
No buts, Gurney. The security men will handle it.
Yes, sir.
Well, maybe you've been working too hard lately. You've got to relax more. Now, here, let me light that cigarette for you.
I watched him trying to make the lighter work.
I don't understand this. I just put fluid in it. There's a brand new flame.
It seemed ridiculous. A little piece of mechanism like a cigarette lighter frustrating the big important executive.
Oh, blast this lighter. Here's a match.
It was such a small thing. And yet as I watched him, a thought began to take shape in my mind. Nebulous at first, incredible perhaps, but it grew.
You just relax for a few days. Everything will turn out all right. Well, the main thing is not to let little things upset you.
It was the cigarette lighter that gave me the idea, and what Hawk had said about little things. For the next week, I observed a thousand petty little annoyances around the office. The door handle that wouldn't turn, the telephone connection that cut off in the middle of an important call. The power failure for no explainable reason. Suddenly, these things began to fall into a pattern. I, Samson Gurney, knew that I had stumbled onto a secret so monstrous in its implications that I was almost afraid to pursue it. On October 12, 1956, I established communication with them. I will curse the moment to my dying breath. Who's there?
Night security guard.
Oh, hello, Henry.
Oh, hello, Mr. Gurney. What are you doing here so late?
I'm just doing a little repair work on my ENIAC computator.
Sure some mess of wires and tubes.
Yes, it is.
Well, I gotta finish my rounds. Won't forget to turn out the light, will you, Mr. Gurney?
No, Henry, no. I won't forget.
Night.
Yeah, good night. When you were a child, did you ever try to imagine that you were all-powerful? I felt like that when I finished hooking the input of the typewriter to the main vacuum tube of the ENIAC. Then I turned on the current that sent a million volts of pulsing energy into the electronic nerves of the machine. I am certain that if anybody were watching me in the next moment, he would have thought me a raving maniac. I still wonder if perhaps it is not all a nightmare. Now, you! If what I have guessed at is true, if there's life and intelligence in this home, make a sign! There was nothing. Nothing but the hum of the machine and the dull glowing of the tubes. Then, suddenly, without provocation or explanation, it happened. The ENIAC typewriter began to respond to the impulses from the machine. The letters were Y-E-S. Yes. It had happened. I, Samson Gurney, had communicated with a machine. I was about to try to communicate again when suddenly, on ball-bearing casters, a heavy metal filing cabinet began to roll away from the wall toward me. I started to move to one side when another cabinet slid out from the wall and then another surrounding me. That was when I realized that they cooperate. We taught them that, you see, on the assembly lines and in the factory. There was no way out. How could a mere man reason with some machine? Still, he needed us. They needed us to oil them and repair them and build them. They hadn't gotten to the point yet where they could exist without man. I had to make them understand that before they killed me. Listen to me. You must listen. What good will it do you if you kill me? I'm only one man, but I can help you. I can be useful to you. Do you hear me? Do you hear me? You're going to need men to oil you and repair you. I'll do anything. I'll do absolutely anything you want, but in the name of God, don't kill me. If you can understand it, answer me. Answer me. The appeal captured the longing of centuries. Man as slave to the machine. And after a moment, the circuits glowed more brightly. The cabinet slid back to the walls as I tore the tape from the machine and read it. The words were almost pathetic in their longing, but most ominous in their implication. They read, "Address me as master." My life for the next 6 months was a nightmare. The ENIAC gave me messages which I had to transmit into my telephone. I was frantic. I began to lose weight. I couldn't sleep. My nights were torture, a constant fear. It was in December, just after Christmas. I was sitting in my room, listening to a broadcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, a special bulletin. Already 24 hours before the peak of the New Year's traffic, over 1,000 deaths have been reported. This is an unprecedented figure. Again, if you...
That very afternoon, I had transmitted a message to the telephones for relay to all machines of transportation. The message was one word. Kill. Next morning, I avoided my office. Instead, I went directly to the office of Mr. Hawk. I was highly agitated. My lips trembled as I spoke.
Well, Gurney?
Mr. Hawk? What I'm going to tell you sounds crazy. I know it does, but I must say.
All right, say it then, for heaven's sake.
Mr. Hawk, have you ever heard of resistentialism?
Resist what?
Resistentialism.
You're not making sense, Gurney.
Mr. Hawk, I'm trying to tell you. All these accidents, the trouble with the machines, Mr. Hawk, they're alive. They think, they cooperate, and they hate us.
Who?
The machines.
Gurney!
You've got to believe me. I've communicated with him. I know... What are you doing?
Now, just relax, Gurney. Everything will be all right.
What are you doing?
Miss Roscoff, send for the plant physician at once. Mr. Gurney has had a nervous collapse.
But Mr. Hawk...
Everything will be all right, Gurney. We'll give you a nice, long rest.
You fool. You blind, stupid fool. Can't you see what you're doing? Fool, fool, fool!
When the plant physician arrived a few moments later, Lucius Hawk was found at his desk, strangled to death in a nest of telephones. The wires were still humming softly.
Samson Gurney, you stand accused of the crime of murder. How do you plead?
I did not kill him, I did!
So record. Prosecution will proceed with testimony.
Now, Miss Roscoe, did the accused quarrel with your employer on the morning of the murder?
Oh, yes. He and Mrs. Hawk quarreled violently. I could hear Mr. Gurney screaming at him. And Mr. Hawk asked me to send for the plant physician.
What were his words?
He said, Mr. Gurney has had a nervous collapse.
Now, Mr. Simpson, you are a guard at the Brook Meadow Project?
Yes, sir.
When did you have occasion to meet the accused?
Right after those accidents. He was snooping around the construction area.
Samson Gurney, court hereby finds you guilty of murder in the first degree. Recommendation that you be examined, committed to the state hospital for the criminally insane at Matawan.
And that's how I came to be here at the hospital, Dr. Klein. That's the whole story.
Thank you, Mr. Gurney.
You can see that I'm not insane. You must believe me, Doctor.
Of course I believe you, Mr. Gurney. Now tell me about this revolt.
It will begin in Washington, then spread to New York.
Yes?
The Madison Avenue buses lead the charge. Picture it, Dr. Klein. 3,000 buses roaring rampant through the streets, people running like rats in a maze looking for manholes in the pavement.
And you really believe this will happen, Mr. Gurney?
I know it, Doctor. The worst part of it is there's no way to stop them now. It's too late.
Now, you mustn't excite yourself,
but
Mr. Gurney.
Doctor, don't you see? It's fair enough, I suppose. We built them. We taught them to think for themselves. It was bound to come. I guess the female machines will be worst of all in the beauty parlors. They're more high-strung, you know.
Well, since there's nothing we can do about it, Mr. Gurney, suppose you go to your room and...
Maybe if I went to my old Plymouth, I could make a deal before the police cars got me.
Yes, Doctor?
Would you take Mr. Gurney to his room guard? He's already been given sedation.
Yes, sir.
Those concrete mixers may have made a mistake, you know. Just high spirits and all that, but... If they got so they liked the flavor...
Well, we'll see you later, Mr. Gurney. Now, try not to worry too much. All right, guard.
This way, sir.
Oh, machines revolting. Telephones strangling people. Oh. Oh, blasted cigarette lighter. Why won't it work? I just filled it. Flint is good. Oh, well, you can never trust this newfangled machinery...
Next week, Dimension X will present a story of the future. A story of an insignificant pebble in the sky called Earth. And of a man from a distant star who grew to love this unimportant planet. Dimension X is transcribed each week by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Street & Smith, publishers of the magazine Astounding Science Fiction. Nightmare was written by George Lefferts and based on a poem, The Revolt of the Machines, by Stephen Vincent Benet. Featured players in the cast were John Gibson as Mr. Gurney and Rita Lynn as Bella Roscoe. Norman Rose is your host. Music by Albert Berman. Engineer, Bill Chambers. Dimension X is produced by William Welch and directed by Edward King.
Oh, why is it that scary? Those machines, you can't trash them as far as you can throw them. Yes, yes. Take my battle axe, for instance. Please. Oh, yes. You finally got it. Good for you. But that Samson Gurney, really. Even I felt he was a little crazy. Must have had a screw loose somewhere. Oh, now if I hated the story of machine, I'd just smash it up in the Reynolds wrap. It's called foiling their plan. Oh, yes. Thank you. But I won't go and turn you off on machines, because up next is a feature with one cool robot. He's the best on the circuit. Oh, yes. It's called The Day the Earth Stood Still. Mike Orini, take it away. It's all yours.
Is there life on any of the other planets? So in tonight's play, we will tell you of a possible momentous event in our future. The arrival of this planet, on this planet, of a man from the outer space. The day the Earth stood still. And as our stars of this provocative drama from 20th Century Fox, we have one of their fastest rising stars, Michael Rennie, co-starring with that outstanding actress, Jean Peters. And Jean Peters as Helen Benson.
It was a pleasant spring day. An ideal day for a walk in the park. A day to push the baby buggy and be glad you were alive. There'd been at least 20 such sparkling days that spring, and perhaps a billion or more of them since the Earth began. And nothing had ever happened to spoil them but a few small fires, or a slight head cold in the evening, or a rain squall. This spring day, in the middle of the marvelous 20th century, was different. It was the most different day that had happened to mankind since the first Christmas. The thing was noticed in Hong Kong first, on the British radar.
But that's impossible. That thing must be doing about 4,000.
That can't be aircraft, sir. Must be a buzz ball.
Better give an alarm. Keep it steady, though. Maybe faulty equipment.
If the British radar in Hong Kong was faulty, so was the radar all over the Orient and Asia and Europe. So were the announcers on the radio.
This is Moscow.
This is Calcutta, India.
This is Radio Luxembourg.
The American radar screen quickly confirmed the fact that there was nothing wrong with the British radar, and that there was something very gravely wrong 40 miles out in space, far above the Earth.
Luckton at Ferris to Baker, Ferris to Baker. I have an object at 200,000 feet, 4000 miles an hour.
Then it was here. Incredibly, it was here. Burning down through the sky over Washington, D.C., hovering over the mall. Descending.
They're here! They're coming! They're here!
Not a sound. Stillness. Not a move from the cordon of tanks and armored cars and troops in full battle dress. Not a sound or gesture from the monstrous domed disc resting on the grass.
The ship designed for travel outside the Earth's atmosphere landed in Washington today at 3:47 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We still do not know where it came from. The ship is now resting exactly where it landed 2 hours ago. So far, there is no sign of life from inside the ship. Behind the cordon of troops, tanks, and artillery is a huge crowd of curiosity seekers. Every eye, every weapon is trained on the ship. The atmosphere is one of terrific tension rather than of fear. It's been that way for... Just a minute, ladies and gentlemen. I think something's happening. The spaceship is opening up. Someone is coming out.
Opened in the smooth, unbroken metal skin of the spaceship. A ramp slithers out on the grass. Against an eerie glow of unearthly light from inside the spaceship stands the spaceman. He is a man, entirely like ourselves.
He wears a close-fitting suit like a deep-sea diver's armor, but of alien material. The spherical helmet entirely conceals his head. He holds up his hand. He is going to speak.
We have come to visit you in peace and with goodwill. Receive me as a friend.
Here he comes, men. Watch it. Keep that BAR trained on him.
He's going for something in his tunic, sir.
Quiet.
It's a ray gun or something. I'm going to let him have it.
No, no, wait. You fool, he's down. Hold back that crowd. Everybody, back.
Your wound doesn't look too bad.
I'm sorry, but you shouldn't have gone for that ray gun.
It was not a weapon.
He understands us.
It was a gift for your president. With it, you might have studied life on other planets.
What's bothering the crowd, Lieutenant? Tell him to...
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
A nightmare stands on the ramp leading out of the spaceship. A mechanical giant, monstrous, all metal and menace, with a visor in his helmet lifting slowly, revealing a dreadful light boiling within that metal head. And suddenly, out of that incandescence, a narrow ray. Rifles, tanks, artillery glow with that terrible incandescence and become vapor in a mush of puddled steam. And in the deathly silence that follows, the robot strides down the ramp. The Avenger. From where?
George! The Gletscher Roscoe! He won't hurt you now.
Let's get you to a hospital.
Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon.
The doctors here tell me your wound is not serious.
No. It amazes them that it's almost healed already.
I'm very glad.
It should serve as some sort of indication of our powers.
My name is Harley, secretary to the president. I've been told you speak our language fluently, that your name is Mr. Klaatu.
Just Klaatu.
The president has asked me to convey our deepest apologies for what has happened.
Sit down, Mr. Harley.
I'm sure I don't have to point out that your arrival was something of a surprise. Had you been traveling long?
About 5 months. Your months.
You must have come a long way.
About 250 million of your miles.
Naturally, we're very curious to know where you come from.
From another planet. Let's just say that we're neighbors.
It's rather difficult for us to think of another planet as a neighbor.
I'm afraid in the present situation you'll have to learn to think that way.
The present situation?
I mean the reasons for my coming here.
Would you care to talk about it?
Not now, or with you alone.
Perhaps you'd rather discuss it personally with the president.
I want to meet with the representatives from all the nations of the Earth.
I'm afraid that would be a little awkward.
Why?
In view of the tensions and suspicions in our world today, such a meeting would be impossible.
Mr. Harley, my mission here concerns the existence of every last creature who lives on Earth. It must not be complicated by the childish jealousies, intrigues, suspicions of your planet.
Our problems are very complex. You mustn't judge us too harshly.
I'm impatient with stupidity. My people have learned to live without it.
The president will, of course, do his best to bring about the meeting you desire. I know it'll be quite useless. I wish it were otherwise. I'm very sorry, Mr. Klaatu.
Wait. Before making any grave decisions, I think I should get out among your people. Become familiar with the basis for these strange, unreasoning attitudes.
Our military people insist that you do not attempt to leave the hospital. The door will be locked. I'm sure you understand. Good day, Mr. Klaatu.
The door will be locked. Will it now?
Klaatu escapes. Nor could the embarrassing news of his disappearance long be suppressed. It was read about in the papers and described in excited tones over the radio.
As authorities authorities at Walter Reed Hospital still refuse to comment on how he managed to escape, except to say that he broke into a hospital locker and stole clothing belonging to a staff doctor. While the government does not minimize the crisis...
This was the latest and the only news. And among the countless millions listening were two men and a woman in an ordinary home on an ordinary street in Washington. Mrs. Sprockett's rooming house.
We are warned, however,
there was Mrs. Sprockett and Helen Benson and little Bobby Benson.
We may be up against powers that are beyond our control or understanding.
Oh, I just can't stand any more of this.
Oh, I wanted to hear more, Mrs. Crockett.
It's exciting, isn't it, Mother?
Hush, Bobby.
Exciting? It's enough to drive a person... Who are you?
I'm sorry. I saw your sign outside and the door was open. My name is Carpenter.
Yes?
I'm looking for a room.
Yes. I do have a nice room.
Are you a G-man?
No, I'm afraid I'm not.
I bet he is, Mom. I bet he's looking for that spaceman.
I think we've all been hearing too much about spacemen, Mr. Carpenter.
This is Mrs. Benson, Mr. Carpenter.
How do you do?
And this is little Bobby, my youngest guest.
Hi.
I'm Mrs. Crockett. You're a long way from home, aren't you, Mr. Carpenter?
How did you know?
Oh, I can tell a New England accent every time. This way, please, Mr. Carpenter. And so this Sunday morning, we asked the question that has been plaguing the entire world for 2 days now. Where is the creature, and what is he up to?
Eat your cereal, Bobby.
Oh, Mom, I'm all muscle as it is.
Bobby.
Okay, Mr. Carpenter.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Crockett. Please, go on reading.
Creature, and what is he up to? If he can build a spaceship that can fly to Earth, and a robot that can destroy our tanks and guns. What other terrors can he unleash at will?
What a man.
Obviously, we must track down this monster and destroy him before he destroys us. Correct. Then why don't they do it?
This spaceman or whatever he is, we automatically assume he's a menace. Maybe he isn't, after all.
Well, then where is he, Mrs. Benson? What's he up to?
Maybe he's afraid.
Oh, he's afraid.
Well, after all, he was shot the minute he landed here. I just was wondering what I'd do.
Perhaps before deciding upon a course of action, you'd want to know more about the people here.
Nothing strange about Washington.
A person from another planet might disagree with you.
Oh, it's all right, Mrs. Crockett. That's Mr. Stevens calling for me. I'll go to the door.
That awful robot standing there like an ugly iron statue is giving me the shivers.
Morning, Tom.
Hello, Helen. Hey, can anybody see us?
No.
So, all right, we're all set. I picked up some sandwiches and put gas in the car and the radio is busted so we can forget about the spaceman for today, huh?
I haven't been able to arrange for anyone to stay with Bobby. Mrs. Crockett's going out and, I don't suppose we could take him with us.
Well, we could.
Just today. Mrs. Crockett has plans, and I don't know who else to ask.
I haven't any plans.
Oh, Mr. Carpenter.
I'd be glad to spend the day with Bobby, if you'd let me.
Oh, great, thanks.
Well, it's very nice of you to offer. Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Carpenter, this is Tom Stevens.
Hi.
How do you do? Bobby and I had a fine time yesterday afternoon. I thought he might show me around the city today.
Well...
Please, I'd enjoy it.
This is where my father is buried. Robert Benson, Virginia, 1st Lieutenant, 45th Infantry. April 10th, 1916, January 29th, 1944.
Your father was very young, wasn't he, Bobby?
He was killed at Anzio.
Did all these people here die in wars?
Well, most of them. Didn't you ever hear of Arlington Cemetery?
I'm afraid not.
You don't seem to know much about anything, Mr. Carpenter.
I've been far away, Bobby.
Don't they have places like this where you've been?
Not like this one. You see, they don't have any wars. Let's walk.
All right.
What would you like to do now?
Go to the movies.
All right.
No fooling?
No fooling. Do you have to have money to go there?
Well, I've got $2. I'll treat you, okay?
No, I want to take you. Look, do you think they'd accept these?
Oh, gee, what are they? Diamonds?
Well, in some places, these are what people use for money. They're easy to carry and they don't wear out.
I bet they're worth $1 million.
Would you give me your $2 for two of these?
Sure, okay.
There you are.
Let's not say anything to Mom about this, huh?
Why not?
Well, she doesn't like me to take advantage of people. Hey, before we go to the movies, would you like to see the Abraham Lincoln Memorial?
Thank you. Yes, I would.
Well, this is it. That's the Gettysburg speech up there.
That this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, and for the people shall not perish from the earth. Those are great words.
That's some statue.
That's the kind of man I'd like to talk to. Bobby, who is the greatest man in America today?
Oh, gee, I don't know. The spaceman, I guess.
I was speaking of Earthmen.
Oh, I don't know. The president?
I mean the greatest philosopher, the greatest thinker, scholar.
Oh, well, that's Professor Barnhart, I guess.
Yes, Professor Barnhart.
He's the greatest scientist in the world, and he lives right here in Washington, right near where my mother works.
Where is that?
Department of Commerce. She's a secretary. Why?
I have an idea, Bobby. Let's go see Professor Barnhart.
What for?
You just said he's the greatest man in America.
You're kidding, aren't you?
Wouldn't you like to meet him?
Well, sure I would. Oh, go on. I bet you'd be scared.
Maybe we can scare him more than he can scare us.
I like you, Mr. Carpenter. You're a real screwball. Gee, maybe the professor isn't at home.
Let's take a look through that window.
I'll bet this is where he works. Look in there. Books all over. Blackboard's full of stuff. That door's locked, too.
Is it? I know it isn't, Bobby.
Well, that's funny.
We'll go in and wait for him. I'm sure he won't mind.
Gee, just think. All the brains that goes on in here. What's all that stuff on the blackboard?
It's a problem in celestial mechanics.
And what's the matter?
You'll never get the answer that way. Let's see.
Hey, it says don't erase, don't touch.
This is right. Check. Correct. Correct. And here's where he gets off the track. Now we'll fix that. So.
You must be an arithmetic teacher, I bet.
Differentiate the equation. There.
Who are you?
Uh-oh.
How dare you come in like this? How dare you write on that blackboard? Do you realize the professor's been working on that problem for weeks?
He'll solve it in no time now.
What do you want?
We came to see Professor Barnhart.
Well, he's not here, and he won't be back until evening. I think you better leave.
Will you tell him that Mr. Carpenter is here? 1615 M Street, Northwest. I think he'll want to talk to me.
Indeed.
Thank you. Oh, it may have entered your mind to erase what I've written on the blackboard.
It certainly has.
I wouldn't do that. The professor needs it very badly. Come on, Bobby.
Carpenter, 1650 M Street, Northwest. Carpenter, M Street. Operator, give me the police.
Stevens and Helen Benson drive up to the boarding house after their picnic, quite unaware of the dark squad car parked at the curb a few feet ahead.
Well, here we are.
Thank you, Tom. It was a wonderful day.
You still haven't answered my question.
Oh, you know how I feel, Tom. But I still want time to think it over.
If I could only tell the boss I was getting married and acquiring two dependents.
You're a good salesman.
A good salesman wouldn't give you time to think about it.
Good night.
Didn't you forget something? Now, good night.
Good night.
Night.
Oh, Mr. Carpenter.
Hi, Mom.
Hello, darling.
Mrs. Benson, this is Mr. Brady.
How do you do?
How do you do?
Mr. Brady's a government agent.
Oh? Did you have a nice day, Bobby?
We had a swell time, didn't we, Mr. Carpenter?
Yes, we did.
We went to the movies and had a banana split, and we went to see Daddy.
Oh, I don't know how to thank you, Mr. Carpenter.
I enjoyed every minute of it.
We better get going.
Yes, good night, Bobby.
Good night.
I'll tell you the rest of that story tomorrow. Good night, Mrs. Benson.
Good night.
Nice meeting you, Mrs. Benson.
Thank you.
Why did Mr. Carpenter have to go with Mr. Brady?
I don't know. Maybe it was a mistake. Upstairs with you.
Yeah. We sure had fun today. We went all over Washington and went to see Professor Barnhart.
Professor Barnhart?
Oh, sure.
Barnhart? Up to bed now. Pronto.
Is this the man you wanted to see, Professor Barnhart?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Brady. If I may speak to Mr. Carpenter alone, please.
I'll wait outside, Professor.
You are Mr. Carpenter?
Yes, Professor.
Who wrote those equations on my blackboard?
My clumsy way of introducing myself.
Forgive the manner in which you were picked up. Hilda called the police before I saw your annotations on the board.
I appreciate the need for security, Professor.
I have not quite fathomed the problem, even with your remarkable assistance, Mr. Carpenter.
Let's look at it, sir. All you have to do now is substitute this expression at this point.
Yes, that will reproduce the first order term. But what about the effect of the other terms?
Negligible. With variation of parameters, this is the answer.
How can you be so sure? Have you tested this theory?
I find it works well enough to get me from one planet to another.
Klaatu.
I spent 2 days at your Walter Reed Hospital. I was interviewed by...
I need no proof. This blackboard is proof.
If you are not interested, or if you intend to turn me over to the Army, we needn't waste any more time.
Interested? Will you excuse me one moment, please? Mr. Brady, you may go now. Please thank General Cutler and tell him that I know this gentleman. So much for that, Klaatu. Now, please, sit down.
You have faith, Professor.
Faith and curiosity. Do sit down. I have several thousand questions to ask you.
I would like to explain my mission here.
That is my first question.
It was my hope to discuss this officially with all the nations of the world. I was not allowed the opportunity. Now, we know from scientific observation that your planet has discovered a rudimentary kind of atomic energy. We also know that you're experimenting with rockets.
Yes, that is true. What exactly is the nature of your mission?
To warn you that your planet faces danger. What I have to say must be said to all concerned. I come to you as a last resort. Must I take drastic action in order to get a hearing?
What sort of action do you mean?
Violent action? Perhaps leveling the island of Manhattan? Or toppling the Rock of Gibraltar into the sea? Well?
Would you, for example, be willing to meet with a group of scientists I'm calling together? We are having our first meeting tonight. Perhaps you could explain your mission to them and they in turn could present it to their various peoples.
That is what I came to see you about.
One thing, Klaatu. Suppose this group should reject your proposals. What is the alternative?
There is no alternative, Professor. In such a case, the planet Earth would have to be eliminated.
Such power exists?
I assure you, such power exists.
The scientists who are attending these meetings have come here from all over the world.
Now, this power you speak of, they must be made to realize that it exists. Now, you mentioned a demonstration of force.
Yes.
Something that would affect the entire planet?
That can be arranged.
Perhaps a little demonstration.
Something dramatic but not destructive. It's quite an interesting problem. Would tomorrow be all right?
If you say so.
Say about noon?
Then tomorrow at noon. Good.
Going out tonight, Mrs. Benson?
Oh, it's you, Mr. Carpenter.
I'm afraid I startled you.
Yes, I am going out. Mr. Stevens is calling for me.
Everyone seems so...
Jittery is the word.
Bobby's the only person I know who isn't jittery. He's a fine boy, Mrs. Benson.
Naturally, I think so.
Warm, friendly, intelligent. He's the only real friend I've made since I've been here.
Mr. Carpenter, this is none of my business, but why did that detective come here last night, that Mr. Brady?
Bobby and I tried to see Professor Barnhart in the afternoon, but he wasn't in. Apparently, they thought I was looking for secrets of some kind.
Well, that must be Tom now.
Oh, Mr. Stevens, do come in. Helen is in the sitting room.
Alert Mrs. Crockett. She has a romantic mind.
Hello there, Helen. Got a minute to spare. You ready? Hello, Carpenter. Picture starts at 8:50 on the dot, Helen.
I'll be ready in a minute. I was just talking to Mr. Carpenter.
Oh, I hope Mr. Carpenter won't think I'm intruding.
Excuse me. I was just going up to my room. Good night.
Good night, Mr. Carpenter.
Have a good time, both of you.
Thank you. Tom, that was awful.
I'm sorry. I guess I'm just tired of hearing about Mr. Carpenter. Mr. Carpenter.
Shh.
I don't like the way he's attached himself to you and Bobby. After all, what do you know about him?
Very little, it's true. Well, let's not stand and talk about it anymore. I'll go up and get my things.
Gee, Mr. Carpenter, thanks a lot for helping me with my homework.
That's all there is to it, Bobby, my boy. All you have to remember is first find the common denominator, then subtract.
I got you. Thanks, Mr. Carpenter.
I'm leaving with Tom, Bobby. You'll go to bed on time now, won't you?
I'll say goodnight again, Mrs. Benson.
Mr. Carpenter...
Yes?
Nothing. Good night.
Good night. Night, Bobby.
Bobby, I think it would be better if you didn't see quite so much of Mr. Carpenter.
Well, gee, why, Mom? He's swell. I like him. And he's awful good at arithmetic. He even helped Professor Barnhart.
I'm sure he's a very nice man. I just think he might prefer to be left alone. Now, go to bed, darling.
Why would he want to be left alone?
Don't forget to brush your teeth. Come in.
Bobby, do you have a flashlight I might borrow for tonight?
Oh, sure, Mr. Carpenter. It's a real Boy Scout one.
Thank you, Bobby.
Why do you want it?
The light in my room went out. See you tomorrow. Better get into bed now.
Gee, I wonder if the batteries are any good. Mr. Carpenter!
Bobby went to the door and opened it. What he saw down the hallway puzzled him. Mr. Carpenter's door was ajar and light was pouring out of his room.
Funny. He said his light went out.
Then Mr. Carpenter came out carrying the flashlight and stealing down the steps like a thief. This was peculiar, but this was adventure. Bobby followed Mr. Carpenter, and what he saw couldn't have been a dream. It was too real. But it couldn't have been true either. It was too deliciously frightful. Dream or not, it was filled with darkness, stung by staccato flashes from a genuine Boy Scout flashlight. Flashes that activated a giant robot into knocking out his guards so that Mr. Carpenter from the boarding house could get into the shed the army had built around the spaceship. And dream or not, Bobby saw this Mr. Carpenter go into the spaceship. And then a wave of sheer terror swept over Bobby at last, and he turned and ran wildly away, the way little boys always run in nightmares.
trying so hard and moving so slowly and all the time falling down. It was awful. It was swell. When his mother came home around midnight, Bobby was curled up on the sofa. Instantly, he jumped up and ran to her and to Tom Stevens as they came into the hallway.
Mom, Mom, listen.
Bobby, what are you doing down here at this hour, fully dressed?
Well, Mr. Stevens, Mom, I had to tell you.
Tell me what?
What's the matter, Bobby?
I followed Mr. Carpenter tonight, right after you left, and gee, where do you think he went? Right into the spaceship.
Now, Bobby, just one minute.
Honest, Mom, I saw him. They got a shed built around the spaceship so nobody can get to it. But Mr. Carpenter flashed a signal to that Iron Man up there. And what do you think?
Bobby, have you been dreaming again?
Why, sure.
No, Mom, honest, I haven't. I promise you, I saw it.
Where did you see all of this?
Well, I'm telling you, on the lawn down at the mall. In that place where the soldiers are all out in front.
And where were the soldiers all this time?
Well, that robot fella grabbed him and knocked him out.
Oh, Bobby.
Yeah, and then Mr. Carpenter walked into the shed, and the spaceship opened up, and he walked right inside, and it closed again. Gee, I like Mr. Carpenter, but I'm scared, Mom.
Oh, darling, it was just a bad dream. We'll prove it to you. Tom, will you see if Mr. Carpenter's still up? Ask him to come down here a minute. Yes, Tom?
Helen, he's not there, but look what I found on the carpet.
It can't be a diamond, can it?
I don't know.
But it's much too big.
Oh, but it looks real to me.
Oh, Mr. Carpenter's got lots of them. He gave a couple of them to me. Here.
He gave you these?
Well, not exactly. I gave him $2.
I don't know, but this whole thing, it just doesn't make sense. Look. Helen, do you think it's all right for you to stay here?
There's a strong lock on my door. And Bobby's going to sleep in my room tonight.
Okay.
Upstairs, nightmare boy.
It wasn't a nightmare.
Bobby.
Yeah, Mom?
Bobby, your shoes are soaking wet.
Yeah, grass on the mall was kind of wet. Good night, all.
Oh, Tom. I wonder...
Klaatu had promised what Professor Barnhart termed a little demonstration. Promised it for the following day at noon. It is now 12:02. In the Department of Commerce building, Helen Benson has left her office on her way to lunch. She stands in the corridor waiting for an elevator.
Mr. Benson.
Mr. Carpenter, what are you doing here?
I came to see you.
Well, I was just going to lunch. What is it?
I saw Bobby this morning before he went to school.
Yes?
I want to know what he told you.
Oh, Bobby has such an active imagination.
Did you believe what he told you?
Really, Mr. Carpenter, this is where I work, and I only have a short time for lunch today. If you'll excuse me...
I'll go down with you.
If you like. The service elevator's open. You'll have to press the button, Mr. Carpenter.
Oh, yes, yes.
It was just 5 seconds before noon of that fateful day when Helen Benson and Mr. Carpenter stepped into that electric elevator. At that same moment, the enormous commerce of our briskly modern world roared and thundered in the streets. Melancholy way among the motionless motors. Bicycles moved before awe and the common desolation made the riders stop of their own free will. Electric clocks stopped on the dot of noon. All across the powered world, the machines stood still. Toast blasters failed to pop and battle fleets on maneuvers drifted aimlessly on their dead propellers. Joe Smith's milkshake didn't spin, and the humming turbines deep in Hoover Dam didn't produce currents. Mrs. Housewife's washer stopped in the middle of its cycle, and electric lights went out all over the world. At a conference table in Washington, a hasty council of the armed services was held.
As far as we can tell, gentlemen, all electric power has been cut off all over, with few exceptions. And even these exceptions are remarkable. Hospitals, planes in flight, that sort of thing. I wish I could be more specific, but all communications are out. I can tell you that we are preparing to declare a state of national emergency, but before we start discussing plans, I want a report from Colonel Ryder.
Now, all I can report, General, is that the robot at the spaceship was discovered to have moved last night. It knocked unconscious the two soldiers guarding the entrance to the shed the Army engineers had built around the spaceship, indicating that someone, presumably the spaceman, had wanted to get into the ship for one reason or another.
In all likelihood, the signal for this demonstration of his planet's power. Go on, Colonel.
Well, that's all, sir.
Well, gentlemen, until now, we've agreed on the desirability of capturing this man alive. We can no longer afford to be soft in this matter. We will get him alive if possible, but we must get him. Is that clear, gentlemen? Dead or alive, get him.
Oh, where's my teddy bat, huh? I mean, this is scary, scary, scary. How would you like to be that woman locked in the elevator with that spaceman? She could really get the shaft. Oh, yes, thank you. I mean, everyone has their ups and downs, but an elevator, you can wind up a lot further than just 6 feet down, huh? Yes, yes. Oh, hey, I bet her spirits need a lift, eh? Yes. Oh, thank you. Hey, hey, no, really. And what about that Gort character? Talk about a laser brain. Wow. Oh, I mean, I've heard of eyes like daggers and seeing red, but that Gort, he really cakes the tank. Oh, now I wish I could have been there to see that theory about UFOs. No, really, I do. I think some of them are just confused for unidentified flying vampires. Yes, yes. No, but you can always tell by the markings. Two of them around the neck. Yes. Well, we had better get back to our story. I don't want to leave you hanging in midair. No. Whatever that spaceman has to say, I'm sure it will floor us between floors. Oh, back to the day we are stood still.
Electric power has been neutralized on the stroke of noon as a token of the spaceman's power and as a warning to the Earth. While they've been trapped between floors in an elevator, the spaceman has told Helen his identity and purpose here.
I've already told you more than I told Professor Barnhart, because my life, in a sense, is in your hands. But if I die, a world, your world, may die too.
Yes, I understand.
I thought if you knew the facts, you'd appreciate the importance of my not being caught before the meeting tonight with the world scientists.
Yes, of course. Of course I do. You hold great hope for this meeting, don't you?
I can see no other hope for your planet. If the meeting should fail, then I'm afraid there is no hope.
Oh, the lights. And we started again.
It must be 12:30.
Yes, exactly. Where are you going now?
Back to the boarding house. I'll be safe there for the afternoon. I'll be able to keep an eye on Bobby. He's the only other person who knows about me.
No. Wait a minute. There is someone else.
How? There can't be.
Tom. He was with me last night when Bobby told me what he saw. Well, of course, he doesn't know anything definite, and, well, he talked to me first before... But then we can't take a chance, can we?
Can you get in touch with him?
I think so.
I mean at once, now.
I'll try.
You will. You must.
Hello. Operator, I was connected with my party. Please,
Hello? Oh, is this Mr. Tom Stevens' office again? We were Well, I must speak to Mrs. No, Mr. Stevens, yes, this is Mrs. Benson. Benson! Well, when do you expect him in, then? Well, will you tell him I called, and please not to leave his office? I'm coming down to see him. Yes, yes, it's very important. To you, too.
Margaret, this is Mr. Stevens. I just got in. Now, listen, call the Pentagon. Who? Miss Benson, when? Never mind. This is more important. Listen. Call the Pentagon and find out who's in charge of the spaceman business. Whoever it is, I want to talk to him.
Tom.
Call me back right away and don't take any other calls. Brush him off fast.
Tom, I've been trying to get you all afternoon.
I've got some pretty terrific news about your good friend, Mr. Carpenter.
What about him?
He's the man from the spaceship. I had that diamond or whatever it is checked at three different places. Nobody on Earth's ever seen a stone like that. And after what Bobby's told us, that's enough for me. Why is it nobody knows about this Mr. Carpenter? Why hasn't he got any money?
All right, Tom, it's true.
How do you know?
You've just got to promise me you won't say a word to anybody.
Oh, nobody but the Pentagon.
Please, Tom.
Are you crazy? After what happened today, he's a menace.
You don't understand. You don't realize how important this is.
Important. Of course it's important, and we can do something about it.
You mustn't do anything about it, Tom. Believe me, I know what I'm talking about.
I say he is dangerous. It is our duty to turn him in.
He isn't dangerous. He isn't a menace. He told me what he came here for.
Oh, honey, don't be silly. Because you happen to like the guy, do you realize what this will mean for us? I'll be the biggest man in the country. I'll write my own ticket.
Is that what you're thinking about?
Listen, somebody's got to get rid of him.
Tom, I'm not going to let you do it. Tom, don't.
Hello, Margaret? Yeah. General Cutler? Good. Now, hold on.
You don't know what you're doing. It isn't just you and Mr. Carpenter.
Mr. Carpenter.
It's everybody. The rest of the world is involved.
I don't give a hang about the rest of the world. I'm in this for me.
Tom.
Now, you'll feel different when you see my picture in the papers.
I feel different right now.
Now, you'll see. You're going to marry a hero.
I'm not going to marry anybody. Not even a hero.
Hey, Alan. Hello? General Cutler? General, my name is Tom Stevens, with a V. I have positive information about the spaceman and where he's staying. Right. Yeah, of course I'm sure. He's living in a boarding house at 1615 M Street, Northwest. That is correct, General.
Yes, I have all of it now, Mr. Stevens, and thank you very much indeed. I want to talk to you further, but I haven't time now. We want to act on this.
Yes, sir?
Have Colonel Ryder deploy all Zone 5 units according to Plan B immediately. Investigate 1615 M Street Northwest for presence of spaceman. Repeat.
Mr. Carpenter.
Right here. Did you see Tom? What does he say?
It's no good. It's too late. I've got a taxi outside. Hurry.
Attention, Zone 5. Attention, Zone 5. Man and woman observed entering taxi at 1615 M Street Northwest. Man is probably Klaatu, alias Carpenter. Establish roadblocks according to Plan Baker and maintain station. Remain on radio alert until further orders.
I don't know. I think we may have been seen getting into the taxi.
Where can you go?
I'm sure Barnhart can arrange to hide me until the meeting tonight.
Where is it going to be?
At the ship. Now look there. Army cars.
Full troops in full gear.
The alarm is out, all right.
Well, it's only a few more blocks to Professor Barnhart's.
I'm worried about Gort. I'm afraid of what he might do if anything should happen to me.
Gort? But he's a robot.
He's a product of centuries of refinement.
But what could he do without you?
There's no limit to what he could do. He could destroy the Earth.
And the city is swarming with patrol cars, hunting you. How can we tell them?
They won't listen. You must listen. If anything happens to me, you must go to Gort. You must give him this message. Klaatu, Barada, Nikto. Gort. Klaatu, Barada, Nikto. Say it.
Gort. Klaatu, Barada...
Nikto.
Gort. Klaatu, Barada, Nikto. Klaatu, Barada, Nikto.
Nikto.
Remember those words.
Plateau, Barada, Nikto.
Attention, Zone 5. Taxi cab moving north on 14th Street from Harvard Street. Man and woman in back seat. License number H0012. H0012. Section 2, close in. This is your target vehicle.
We're hemmed in. Driver, we'll get out here. I'm going to try to run for it. If they get me, you get to Gort. Now.
There he is! Stop or we'll shoot! Stop or we'll fire!
Mr. Carpenter.
Gort, run!
Never mind, I'll take the guy.
Centuries, ages of superhuman, superplanetary skill had bred intuition and a dim power of reason into the enormously complex intelligence inside of Gort's metal brain case. When Helen Benson stumbled up to the shed that housed the space machine, the guards were not there. Then she saw them. They were lying inside, their rifles fused and bent. Gort somehow knew that Klaatu was dead. Gort was already on the move. He was on the move toward Helen.
No! No! Gort, no!
The visor of his helmet was opening on that cosmic incandescence within, seething with world ruin, aiming impassively at Helen.
Gort! Gort! Klaatu! Klaatu! Barada! Barada! Nikto!
Benson fainted. When she returned to consciousness, she was lying on a dais bathed in a soft, shadowless light in a chamber vaguely circular of completely unfamiliar build. She was in the space machine. Across the room stood Gort with his back to her and lying in front of him on a platform. Was applying electrodes to his master in a piercing, whining, maddening sound. Klaatu moved. He sat up. Stood up.
Mr. Carpenter!
Hello?
I thought you were...
I was. They took me to an emergency hospital at the city jail. Gort broke in and took me back here. This technique can restore life in some cases, and only for a limited time.
How long?
No one can tell. Time enough and more for me to go outside and speak to Professor Barnhart's scientists. I must speak to them. It's what I came for. Gort will put out the ramp. People of Earth, you men of science, you are here from all over your world, Europe, Asia, representing many nations, many ideas. I am leaving soon. You will forgive me if I speak bluntly. The universe grows smaller every day. Where I come from, we believe there must be security for all, or no one is secure. This does not mean giving up any freedom, except the freedom to act irresponsibly. This is the message that I ask you to take back when you return to your native lands. Tell your people and your governments that we have created a race of robots whose function it is to patrol the planets and spaceships and preserve the peace. At the first sign of treachery, They will act automatically. Nothing you have here on Earth can stop them. The penalty for provoking their action is too terrible to risk. Your choice is simple. Live in peace or perish in violence. We shall be waiting for your answer. The decision rests with you. Gott Baringo. Remember.
I'll remember, Mr. Carpenter.
Scary, scary, scary. Well, now that feature was really out of this world, no?
No!
maybe out of this universe. Who knows? Hey, I think I'd give it a 5 stars. Oh, yes. No, really. Maybe more. I don't know. Hey, I feel sorry for the Carpenter character, really. His technique for rising from the dead only lasts for a limited time. Now, he should try my technique, huh? yes. It would really take a bite out of the competition, huh?
Thank you.
No, really. I got to go, but until next week, same bat time, same bat channel. Remember, clack tu barata nictu. Clack tu barata nictu.
Returns control of your radio device to you until next week.
What now?